Hi there. You're listening to the Venture Builder Map podcast. My name is Andries DeVos. I'm the co-founder of Slash, a Singapore-based venture builder. Every week, I come together with brilliant minds to talk about how venture building is changing the way startups are incubated and corporate innovation is evolving. My guest today is Usman Sheikh, the Managing Director of High Output Ventures. High Output Ventures is a seed stage fund and startup studio investing in exceptional domain experts who are building the remote first companies of tomorrow. Usman is a serial entrepreneur, having built, operated, and sold companies over the last 15 years. Thanks for joining me today, Usman. I'm a big fan of your entrepreneurship journey, so I'm very excited to talk about venture building with you.
Well, the first third of my entrepreneurship life was in more traditional media, advertising. I had an outdoor advertising company, which we exited in 2010. That's the point around which point 2011-12 where we met, which is when I transitioned from that into technology, and I got into a company which still runs today, which is called Identify, which is in the HR performance management space and is now facilitating remote teams as well with managing their performance and employees. And then by 2015 and 16, I got into the crypto space as well. At that point in time, I wanted to also start diversifying, which is when HOV was put together. So HOV is a venture studio that incubates and invests in businesses, primarily in the frontier region. We're relatively sector agnostic, but core focuses are B2B SaaS, crypto these days, and anything which is powering the creator economy.
So what is the model there with HOV?
We want to partner with individuals, domain experts who come with an idea, or we have an idea and we partner up with people where they run the thing. So HOV puts in capital, usually 250K, into companies to get them started and growing and get the core team together. From there, we provide support and help the entrepreneur build a team up so that they can then run their businesses independent of HOV itself. So we're in the business of incubating them, and then the goal is to spin them out and get them operating as individual companies on their own.
You've been building businesses since 2003 or so. What drives you? What does impact mean for you? Is it serving a million customers, raising $100 million?
Initially, it was when you're starting off as an entrepreneur, you have the goal that, hey, I want to make this much money, or I want to do this, or I want to get this status or that status. At some point in time, that doesn't really become as meaningful enough. And I think what I've seen with my own sort of businesses is the business of HOV is what drives me as a whole. Managing 10 people or 15 people is not very interesting to me as well, because I don't think that at a certain level now, I don't need to dedicate all my time to do that, because I would get bored. So I think it's scaling the company culture to create internal sort of innovation, growing people, getting people to become specialists, becoming top of their fields. How do we nurture the best talent? How do we attract the best talent to our things? And I think that we're in this time whereby everything is changing so rapidly, and I would like to be a part of it. The incentivization of people to work, the best people now that you have, they have a multitude of options to operate from. They don't need to work for you. They could work for six other people or just consult on their own. So how do you build a company which is going to get people to enjoy coming to work and feel like they're actually making a difference is what drives me. And I think the vision statement for HOV, which is the same for Identify, which when I started nearly 11 years ago, is still the same. That I think that if we create a system whereby people can come do great work, feel like they're having an impact and have a great experience during that, and if we can do that internally and then share it with our portfolio of companies, I feel like we create a lot of positive impact in the world and in the people's lives that work with us.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that's a powerful motivation. It's certainly also our motivation a bit. It's sort of the
Yeah, I don't know if there's a book called The Second Mountain, which the first mountain being your ego, achieving your ego at a peak.
Right.
You sort of go down the valley, you sort of get a little bit more depressed and saying, okay, what's my real purpose in life? The second mountain usually is kind of a little bit more, you know, more transcendental, giving back somehow or doing service. And the service usually is in a form of some kind of impact and an impact of nurturing people, growing people, and at the same time getting involved in some really exciting things. No, very, very cool. I can resonate a lot with what you're saying. So you spoke a lot about like kind of growing and nurturing talent. What is the challenge there? I mean, you run fairly global operations. You're mostly remote, right? But you have location in a few places. Why did you pick those locations?
We used to have locations in the Philippines, in Singapore. And right now, they've all been divested, which is the company's been 100% remote with no HQ of sorts anywhere. You know, from all the way from Philippines, Indonesia, Singapore, Vietnam, India, Pakistan, Dubai, Serbia, and then some people in Canada. So it's across the space that we have people across the board. And I think talent is completely distributed, and it's our responsibility to try to figure out how can we reach the best talent, which is undiscovered, and give them the opportunity to join us. So we're completely distributed as a team right now with no single sort of like HQ per se. I think like that's the hybrid way of working is something which a lot of people are finding out the hard way. We found it out the same way, whereby, you know, when there are HQs, certain people in certain areas where their offices get certain more benefits than other people, and how do you sort of like balance that out? COVID has also accelerated the whole rate of like, I don't want to go to the office, or I don't need to go to the office. I think there's going to be a spot for hybrid work, whereby places like WordPress and Automattic have like hubs in cities, whereby you have a hub if you have the resources in a city where you have a considerable amount of density of people, setting that up, but you don't need to set it up yourself. You can use WeWorks, you can use all sorts of other ways of how to do that. But I think like that's the model if we ever have a large concentration of people and there's enough demand for people to go. I think people have become, we've been doing remote since 2014, so I think a lot of people are very comfortable with just working like this.
How do you build sort of that culture that makes people committed, enthusiastic, helping each other out, deliver at their best, you know, support back to the center, make sure the playbooks evolve, et cetera, et cetera. So how do you create that culture?
You have to be extremely intentional with culture building from the get-go. Many, myself included, a lot of the early businesses was finding that right person, or, you know, just that right mercenary to get the work done, and they're here just to get the work and then they're on to the next thing. And it's very difficult to build continuity in a business when you have a lot of people like that, because then the culture of the business becomes like that as well, which is very transactional in nature. So when a business is not transactional in nature, then we have to figure out like, there has to be a shared alignment as to where we're going and what set of values and beliefs are important to both of us. And I think that we have that defined through our five values that we recruit with, and everything is built around that. We have a high sort of like culture of performance. So, you know, the way performance reviews are run, the way your one-on-ones are run, there's mood tracking done at the company. There's lots of check-ins at the company, whether they're through video or through text. And there are a lot of supportive tools that have been built around to help us to scale to the level that we're at. It's down to the founder to communicate that regularly. So for the last, I don't know, 3 years, I've written a memo to the company every Sunday for without fail. And nearly a year and a half ago, I switched it to a memo and a video to the company every single Sunday. Those are important sort of like things. And we've also instituted a lot of courses that have been internally built. So there's this LMS system with supports learning. And a lot of this has been done. And it really helps when other founders come in and then they can look at certain things and they're like, how are you doing this? How are you doing that? And I think that's the benefit that we have now. When a lot of people look at the way the processes are run at HRV, that they would want to mirror certain processes at their own companies as well. So it's been intentional. It's taken a long time to get to where we're at, and we're still nowhere close to where I would like us to be. So it's still an ever-growing sort of like process of evolving as things around us change.
Totally different topic, concept validation. So you mentioned that you're doing your own, you're developing your own ideas as well, that you then spin off and then you try to attract a CEO for it. And how do you protect yourself? How do you discipline yourself not to get too carried away and fall in love with your own ideas?
I think the concept of flywheels has been very important in doing this. I think most of the time my mistakes in the past has also been perhaps overbuilding or overseeing like what are the core loops that need to go into a product to make it succeed. The rate at which a product receives feedback from its customers or from whatever stakeholder that is going out to is critical. The longer that feedback loop becomes, the more we get caught up in let's add this, let's add that. And then suddenly, you know, 4 weeks becomes 40 weeks and that happens. And so we have to be, the discipline part of it here is to make sure that the product designers from the get-go have spoken with business owners who understand like what are we trying to achieve, who are we trying to achieve it with, what is the minimum that we need to get done to start the process. And I can see the best products today, which are iterating very quickly, using the strategy. The whole build in public concept, which is being used by everyone, is that iterative sort of like releases of products is important, because then you get feedback very quickly. It's either you get feedback quickly or you get no feedback and no one gives a shit, which is most of the time. But it makes that a lot easier to get to that equation. Like, you, yeah, this is why I said numbers don't lie. So, you know, if you can't figure it out, sometimes it's not a function of the product. Maybe your distribution strategy was not right. Maybe you didn't have the right marketing set up for this. And it's easy to say, oh, we don't have the right marketing and therefore the product wasn't a success. But maybe in retrospect, you need to look at your deficiencies and fix that.
So who's leading every new idea you're incubating? Like, what's the skill set of that person?
Well, someone has to have, like, the person needs to have, like, a point of view or needs to have discovered, like, hey, here's an opportunity set which we've uncovered or is growing and there's something over here. And I think that needs to be the first condition whereby the person internally who's brought this up can clearly state the case about like what's happening and why now. And the same way that you would dissect an idea, whether you would go to a VC pitch at the same time, you have to sort of like bring it up and sort of like state your case and see like what's happening.
You know, if we think of incubating our own ideas, we think there is a concept, a design research stage,
right?
Which is more where the solution space is still extremely open. The problem is being researched.
Right.
Then there's sort of a product design stage and sort of a venture design stage where it's already getting a bit more, you know, focused, and you have a few iterations of trying different hypotheses and pivoting here and there, but it's already, the framework is getting clear. And then you have sort of the launch. Once you've launched and it's, the pressure is sort of start shifting, the way we look at it is that it's a more professionalized skill set. In other words, it's something that is that relies on toolkits, methodologies, discipline, a certain process. Whereas post-launch, we find that the parameters become so much more complex that it becomes more of an entrepreneurial challenge. It's not to say that you can't have specialists supporting that process, but then it becomes more of an entrepreneurial challenge of assigning an entrepreneur in residence. Whereas pre-launch, you could kind of assign a professional consultant who has the right skill set. Is that how you look at it as well, or you have a different philosophy around this?
At the end of the day, most people or many people believe they have what it takes to run a startup. So what we encourage is to get people through that process so they can understand how difficult it is and how they do not want to run that again, because that's most people. Most people are like, building is so much fun, right? There's like all that conceptual work, you're working with prototypes, or there's excitement, and then there's launch, and then you face reality. And at that point, most people start to lose interest very quickly, because the default stage for a builder at that time is, I just need to add more features to get it working. And that's why with the flywheel concept, if you can't even get the loop sort of like flying, and you can't get one thing leading to the other, then there's fundamentally something wrong with the structure that you have. So I think there's a process internally which has got people to that stage, and some of them have stuck with it and be like, okay, this is interesting. I want to like lean more into this. And then there are the other people who are like, I want to go back there, and I'm probably going to support someone who wants to do something like this in the future, but I'm not going to be the one who takes the responsibility to do that. That's why even in the early building stages, when we have something, actively looking for other CEOs or potential partners that can come in very early in the cycle who have aligned sort of like values and aspirations, so that we can build and get them to that point. Because a lot of the time, those people need something to show customers or have distribution channels or something put together. But the whole process of building something is another very difficult process. It's difficult, and that's why we don't do too many of these in a year.
So how do you incentivize your team? And I don't know if there's a different tiers between sort of specialists and people are incubating ideas, and maybe they have a different incentive structure, but how do you retain and incentivize?
I think in the traditional structures, it's been very difficult. Where, you know, to add equity and things like that in companies with people of different nationalities and different sort of like origins and stuff like that. Yes, we have different incentive systems for people who then lead and manage products and get them out the door. And that's the clearest sort of like way forward, especially if it... But I think the general structure is like very few people in the organization are going to be in that role, and the majority of people are not going to be in that role. You know, we've run the normal sort of like ways of profit sharing and other sort of like ways in the past, but I don't think like none of them are as scalable as I would have liked. There is this growing sort of like process of decentralized autonomous organizations, or basically crypto, being used. So there's two products that we launched earlier this year where there was a token attached to it, and founding team members were given tokens and they could purchase tokens and stuff like that. And I think there's something definitely in this structure which is of interest to me, as how we could use tokens to figure out how this will get structured for remote organizations. And there are a lot of complexities with this and how will that become liquid and things like that, but it's something that I am now studying more with, both on the creator side first, and then ultimately with all of that research, bring that internal.
Thank you for listening. If you found this discussion valuable and don't want to miss any future episodes, go to Apple Podcasts and Spotify, search for the VP Map podcast, and subscribe.